You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Here we go. Top story of the morning. Dallas Cowboys, who lost to the Eagles yesterday, now need to beat Washington and then hope that Philadelphia loses to the Giants next week in order to get into the playoffs. As for yesterday's game, Dak Prescott struggled, completing just 57% of his passes. Keep in mind, he'd been dealing with an injured shoulder all week. Regardless, Cowboys can't pull it out, and a lot of that falls on head coach Jason Garrett.
We didn't get the job done, but we have to control what we can control. And that's our preparation leading up to the game next week against Washington.
Nick, is there anything at this point that Jason Garrett can do to save his job?
No. And
even if they win and they get into the playoffs?
I refused last week to engage in the fantasy that Dallas was all of a sudden going to go on some magical run, that after being one team through 13 weeks because they played a good game in their 14th game, that was then going to be their 15th game, their 16th game, and on some playoff. No. And I'm going to listen, there's a fair amount of stuff on this show that I predict or I say, and it turns out I'm wrong about. This is not one of them. I said after the Patriot game, you fire that head coach. And the answer was no, you can't. It's a short week. And then when they get crushed by Buffalo on Thanksgiving at home, I said, now it's not a short week anymore. You fire the head coach. No, we can't. And then they get crushed by the Bears. And now you have a long week. And I said, you fire the head coach. And I'm just curious, if at any point they had done that, would they be in a worse position than they are now? Of course not. Because this team was 3-0. They've lost 8 of 12. They were 5-3 at the midway point. What are they now? They're 7-9? We can do that math. They are 7-8, pardon me. 7-9 is maybe a little bit of a projection. There is, to me, no argument to be had that Jason Garrett should retain this job. And in my eyes, there is no possibility that they make the Super Bowl, which is at this point the only way he could retain his job.
I think, obviously, like you said, it would take a football miracle. They get in, they beat Washington, the Eagles lose, which I'm not convinced the Eagles will win that game. I'm going to be honest. Now, I'm not going to go all the way with the miracle and say they get in the playoffs, then they win two games and get to the conference championship, which might be enough in Jerry Jones's eyes to save his job. It wouldn't be enough in my eyes. In my eyes, he would have to get to the Super Bowl to save his job. Okay, but in Jerry's eyes, maybe if they get to the conference championship. But I think the playoffs is possible just because I'm not convinced that Philadelphia is that good. Philadelphia was riding, you know, obviously you're hyped up for that game yesterday. In addition to all that was at stake, it is a rivalry. And they hadn't beaten Dallas in a while, especially with Zeke and Dak playing. So they go into there, they're on an emotional high, they get the win. I wouldn't be shocked to see a letdown, especially with the Giants, you know, coming off a big win and maybe thinking Daniel Jones is special. But if they get in, that's not enough. Look, I think they've had plenty of opportunities to fire him before, and nobody could have said anything. His first 3 years, they were 8-8. You mentioned Tony Romo earlier. Tony Romo played all but one of those games in his first 3 years, and they went 8-8. He's been there 9 full seasons now, 3 winning records. 3 times, if they don't make these playoffs, 3 times out of 9 you're in the playoffs and you're retaining your job? No.
And losing enormous games at the end of the regular season has happened more often than not. 2011, 2012, 2013. You lose in week 17. Week 17 to miss the playoffs. 2 years ago, the first game after Zeke's suspension. Remember that? When they have an opportunity after winning the last three games of Zeke's suspension to get into the playoff picture. You lose a critical game to Seattle. And this year in week 16, you lose this game to Philadelphia. And I want to just go back quickly to that final offensive play. It's 4th and 8. Amari Cooper says he's not winded in the postgame commentary. They just have the regular rotation of guys. I know Jason Garrett is not your de facto play caller anymore. That's Kellen Moore. The head coach of that football team in that spot with your season on the line, if he sees on the field is Jason Witten, Blake Jarwin, Tavon Austin, Michael Gallup, you got three timeouts. You don't need them if you don't get the first down anyway. The game's over. You make sure your best players are on the field. You make sure Randall Cobb and Amari Cooper are on the field in a spot like that, and they didn't do it.
Nick, it honestly felt like they had benched Cooper. Because there were several times in critical situations that he wasn't on the field even before that. Now, so Cooper, as bad as it was, to your point, that didn't surprise me as much as Cobb. Cobb had just had a big catch, and he's obviously a good possession receiver. The fact that he wasn't on the field either is just ridiculous.
All that plus the fact that Ezekiel Elliott was limited after what he did last week, after the money you paid him coming into the season, after the fact that you were going to essentially be a running team because he's your best player, even though Kellen Moore had three great opening weeks with Dak Prescott. It just seems like this all falls on the head coach at some point, probably soon. Broussard, has Kawhi proven he is the best player in Los Angeles?
No, because a week ago, it was clearly LeBron James. And Kawhi is great, but LeBron was playing like the best player in the world. Not the MVP. Giannis is the clear front runner for that, I believe, because he doesn't have the help and Anthony Davis that LeBron has. But LeBron was playing tremendous basketball. So I think he's still the best player in LA when healthy. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt yesterday. I was watching that game, and I'm like, why aren't you being more aggressive? My father was watching it with me, and nobody's a bigger LeBron fan than him. And he's yelling at the TV. You might be a slightly, but he's yelling at the TV, take it to the basket. Don't settle for the three. What are you doing? So I thought LeBron was unusually tentative. I know he took 24 shots. I don't care. He wasn't himself, and that's what he needs to be the best player in LA and to lead the Lakers to the championship. And I know you're going to say LeBron, obviously, because I think Kawhi's praises need to be sung because it is much closer than you think, Nick. Like, I think there are three guys on the top tier right now, the NBA. Giannis, LeBron, and Kawhi. Harden. Kawhi. Oh. Kawhi is the truth. Now, Harden and Luka are just a smidge, not a dash, not a hint, a smidge below those two, all right? But Kawhi Leonard, I don't know why you're so down on me. The boy is bad. And if LeBron slips up a little, Giannis, then Kawhi will pass him.
Okay. So
I want to listen to you, and then I'm going to talk a little more about that.
No. LeBron was clearly not the best player yesterday. And when they first matched up against each other, first game of the year, he was clearly not the better player that night. Everyone can acknowledge that. Who's the better player? Of course it's LeBron, and it's for what you said. I know we have no long-term memory in this country anymore. But can we remember a week ago? Let's not talk about the accomplishments. The four MVPs to zero.
It's not lifetime.
It's not about that. It's about who would you rather have right now. 96 hours ago, this would have been unanimous, even by the most ardent LeBron James critics. Who's been better this year? The guy who, up until 96 hours ago, had played every game this year, whose team was the number one seed in the West, which they still are, by the way, and who, if he wasn't the MVP, was certainly top three. It wasn't even a question. Now, Kawhi yesterday was better. Kawhi was sensational shooting the basketball. He played, by his standards, incredibly heavy minutes. Kawhi almost played 38 minutes, which hopefully we see him before the new year, but I don't know if we will after that. And so credit to Kawhi. And he did spend some time doing what he used to do, guarding the opposing team's best player.
AD and LeBron.
Absolutely right. Kawhi was great yesterday. But the you say I'm down on him. And the reason that I don't put him on the level of LeBron or Giannis or Harden is because I cannot get past the fact of how much easier his job is because he only has to do it 3 out of 4 games. How good would these other guys look if they got the not only minutes restriction, but also the games restriction that Kawhi has? Like, you could, the people, when I first got hired by Fox, really my only job was to go on Colin Cowherd's right. show twice a week for 15 minutes. And those segments always did pretty relatively well. And I used to joke with the boss, so I was like, you guys are only asking me to be good for 30 minutes a week. I was like, I got to be able to do that. It's not that extreme, but what these other guys are being asked to do compared to what Kawhi is doing is different. So that's why it's not
I will give you that.
And so if you tell me I'm going to get LeBron's A game and Kawhi's A game, it is close. I concede that point. But I am so much more regularly getting LeBron's A game compared to Kawhi's DNP game that he removes himself from the discussion, even though in the two head-to-head matchups this year, he's been better. And I interrupted you. You wanted to say something else?
No, I agree with you. Like, I've kind of taken Kawhi. After last year's playoffs, I thought Kawhi Leonard had earned the right with LeBron James about to be 35, coming off injury, 17th year. You're thinking he's going to fall off. The way Kawhi outplayed Giannis in the playoffs, I thought Kawhi had earned the right to be called the best player in the world. And we'd see if he holds up his end of the bargain this year. I'm with you on the load management. It's just, it bothers me. And I think that you kind of disqualify yourself from that, you know, title as best player in the world. He could pick it up in the playoffs, though. But let me ask you this. When he plays, like, is that your only... My only knock against Kawhi really is the load management. Because when he plays, he is definitely with Giannis and LeBron. You wouldn't give him that?
So when he plays, I think that... Games like yesterday, he looks like as good as anybody in the league. No question about it. Because of his lack of playmaking. And people can say, oh, it's gotten better.
He has
and it's gotten better. But that's because it's gone from a D to a B minus. Like, it's
fair.
He is no longer a
maybe a B, but fair.
He's no longer a below average playmaker. I will give him credit. And he had the one really nice shot fake pocket pass last night to generate a layup. And so his playmaking, to me, the lack of it, compared to not only LeBron and Harden, but also Giannis, who is a better playmaker than Kawhi, generates more open threes than Kawhi, and has more on his shoulders than Kawhi. That plus the fact everyone loves his mid-range game. The problem with the mid-range game is, because it's the least efficient shot in the game, it's why he's shooting 45% on the season. It's why that his offensive efficiency numbers aren't quite what they otherwise could be, because you said a few days ago, LeBron doesn't have a go-to move.
Right.
But he does. It's getting to the basket.
But he's not a great free throw shooter. So that, like, even yesterday, he made 1 of 2
Late in the game, made 1 of 2, 3 of 4 for the game. Kawhi's go-to move is to generate the least efficient shot in the game. And so even if you're the best in the game at that, I'd rather have Harden's offensive game. I'd rather have Giannis's all-around game. And obviously, when they're averaging the same amount of points, one guy plays LeBron versus Kawhi, and the other guy leads the league in assists, and Kawhi is stuck on one career double-digit assist game, it's pretty clear.
Kawhi is much better. I mean, LeBron has the statistical edge. There's no question about that. I put Kawhi over Harden because defensively, he's one of the best guys in the league. Defensively, Harden obviously isn't. But Kawhi, you talked about he's a mid-range assassin. He's not taking when they need a bucket, Kawhi knows, get to my spot. And that spot isn't 22 feet. It isn't 19 feet. It isn't 17. It's like 10, 12 feet from the basket. And he hits it at a high rate. That dude, I'm telling you, man, he hasn't lost a playoff series since 2017. I know that's partially because of injury. But he is a winner. He gets it done on both ends of the floor. He doesn't, you know, waste dribbles or anything like that.
And everything they've done this year is saying the regular season doesn't matter, and they played great yesterday, and it's all about the postseason. And if they win the title, because they put all their eggs in that basket, then I just got to eat it. Listen, if the Patriots win the title this year, I got to eat it. If the Clippers win the title this year, I got to eat it.
You know what's going to happen? You'll turn into Ben Roethlisberger.
Okay, there you go. Yeah,
you're going to be eating a lot.
All right, so we'll see. I the smartest bet in sports over the last 15 years has been bet on 23. for, well, the Lakers or the Heat or the Cavs or, I guess, six.
To win it? To get there.
To be the best player in the league in the final game of the year. It's been the best bet in sports. I'll bet it again.
Let's go back to the Cowboys. Dak Prescott, he's going to finish the season with career highs in passing yards and touchdowns. Unfortunately, the Dallas quarterback will most likely also finish the season just like my guy Nick here, watching the playoffs from the couch.
Confirmed.
Now the question is whether Dak deserves to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones is ready to go all in on Dak.
And we have all the confidence in the world in Dak. We've never blinked on that. And, you know, we've had a very aggressive offer out there every step of the way. And we certainly understood that if he stepped it up, which, you know, I think Dak has given us every opportunity to have success. I'm as bullish about Dak as I've ever been.
And yet they might not make the playoffs. They probably won't make the playoffs at 7-8 at this point in the season. Nick, what do you think? Should the Cowboys pay Dak the $35 to $40 million per year he's rumored to make?
Jen, I don't mean to question your read at all. Was that Stephen Jones or Dak's agent?
That was Stephen Jones.
Okay. Because
that was Jerry Jones.
Are we sure that wasn't Dak's agent?
I know.
I don't know what these guys are doing. I don't know how they've... My God, one day I'd love to be on the other side of the negotiation with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you're making my case for me. We've made very aggressive offer to Dak, and he's had every opportunity to prove he's worth more, and I think he's... He almost said it.
I know.
He stopped himself. He's like, and I think he's at every step of the way put us in position. Well, thanks. More money now. The Cowboys are going to make Dak Prescott one of the three highest paid quarterbacks in the history of pro football, and it is going to be a massive mistake. We can see the history of this, which is paying guys that you know are good but not great because you think you have to, and it never works out well.
For fear what? That you'll lose them?
The thing is this, they don't even, because of the franchise tag, you don't even have any credible fear you would lose him for a minimum of two seasons. But for fear of setting a bad precedent, not showing faith in him with the locker room, some odd, I don't know. I don't know why the Rams said at the last moment, there's all the money, Jared Goff, when they had no reason to. I don't know why teams seem to be in a hurry to pay guys before they have to at this one position when every other position has to sing for their supper, hold out, beg and plead for every last dollar. I know it's the most important position, but Dak Prescott is not going anywhere. You have the franchise tag to hold over his head, and the fact that you are going to pay him, I believe, north of $35 million a year when you couldn't compete for a championship when he was making south of $5 million a year is a massive, massive mistake.
It is what the NFL is. He is going to be one of the top three paid quarterbacks in the league. Is he one of the top three quarterbacks?
No,
not even close. But was Kirk Cousins? No. Was Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz? No, it's the way the NFL is. And I think in that $35 million area, I would pay him. Now, if he wants 40, and maybe that's why they haven't signed anything to thus far, then I would franchise him. I would not pay him 40. But let's face it, if they give him $35 million a year, in 4 years, where's that going to be? He's not going to be in the top three anymore in 4 years. He may not be in the top six in 4 years.
But he'll never, he might not be, and he certainly won't be one of the three best, and he certainly won't be one of the six best. And just real quick, Broussard, you just mentioned guys. I think you said Matt Stafford, Kirk Cousins,
Matt Ryan.
Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan. You know what all those teams have in common? None of them got a shot at winning the Super Bowl this year.
Well, most of them missed the playoffs. Matt Ryan was in the Super Bowl
before he got this huge deal.
Carson Wentz, though, people think, I mean, this is a guy, right, obviously before he got the deal, he led them to an 11-2 record.
Yep.
But he's a guy people think can get them to a Super Bowl eventually. I think, look, it's hard to find a franchise quarterback. How much longer do they want to, if they get rid of him, Who knows when the next time they could get a franchise quarterback? This is a guy, you know he's a leader. I don't want to go through all the things I did yesterday, but he's, you know, the teammates love him. He can be the face of your franchise. You know, he has all the intangibles, and he's not bad. Look, he's 39-24 as a starter. Now, you want to shake your head, poo-poo that. Only Russell Wilson and Tom Brady have better records as starters since he's been in the league. Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. And that six games without Ezekiel a few years ago with the suspension, and then that's this 7-8 season, and yet he's still third in wins. So I just think, look, statistically, you can look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not even going to highlight the yardage where he's second in the league in yards, because that's kind of an archaic way of judging somebody's season. But he is fourth in yards per attempt,
which is an important stat.
He's tied for fifth in touchdowns, and he's fourth in QBR. So I think this is a guy, this is your quarterback. You just have to make sure you get the pieces.
Well, what's more important, all those numbers and personal statistics, or getting your team to the playoffs in games that you should be winning, in winnable games?
So I'm going to go option C, because I'm not a quarterback wins stat guy. And it's not fair this year to say, well, Dak doesn't have the wins, but he has the stats. When in previous years, I was saying, because I want to stay consistent, I know he's got a bunch of wins, but look at the numbers, look at his lack of it. To me, you are making the case that so many NFL teams do, which is, what's the alternative? The deal won't age that poorly down the road. When to me, it is this simple. Let's call it $36 million, just for simplicity's sake, okay? Because that would set the new market. It wouldn't be 40. It's probably around where the deal is. The question is Dak Prescott worth three Pro Bowl-level players at other positions? Because $12 million a year gets you the best running back in football, gets you a good wide receiver, gets you an excellent corner. Pick the position. A $12 million a year will get you the top of the market for basically anything other than pass rusher, the very, very best wide receivers, and a couple other guys, left tackle, right? Dak is not. Russell Wilson, yes. Aaron Rodgers, yes. Drew Brees, yes. Brady up until this year, even though he didn't take the money, yes. Next year, Deshaun Watson, sign me up. Patrick Mahomes, 3.5 players, no problem. But the other guys who've gotten this type of money, it scaled to when they got it. Whether it's Matt Stafford, whether it's Matt Ryan, whether it's Jared Goff right now, what we've seen is, they might be worth 1.5 of those players, and they cannot make up the spread. And so what do you do with Dak? To me, the Cowboys
just
clearly won't.
Straight franchise him.
Yeah, I would have offered Dak 27, the Kirk Cousins per year deal, not fully guaranteed. And if you don't want it, Dak, you know what? You got $26 million coming to you next year via the franchise tag, $31 million the year after, and I would do the non-exclusive franchise tag, which means if another team wants him, they can come get him and give me two first-round picks, because I can build my team more smartly that way. Because if this team this year, Broussard, isn't talented enough to even make the playoffs, much less the Super Bowl, what's it going to be when you have to start paring away the roster because your quarterback gets a $30 million per year raise?
But that's the point. You mentioned running back. We got our running back. And if Zeke falls off, we got Tony Pollard for a few years. You know, we signed up a lot of players on the defense. We already gave them the contracts. Amari Cooper was disappointing in the game Sunday, but they'll probably bring him back maybe at a discounted rate. So a lot of those positions are already filled. And I think you said if they're not talented enough. I think they are talented enough if they get the right coach in there. I think this is a team that can compete with the top teams in the NFC.
Things first, while plenty of teams still jockeying for playoff position, Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens are sitting pretty. They've already locked up home field advantage throughout the postseason, thanks in part to a balanced offense, which includes wide receiver Willie Snead, who is kind enough to join us this morning. Willie, thanks so much for hanging with us.
No problem, guys. Good morning. Happy to be on.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you. I'm not going to sit here and ask if you've already stopped to smell the Baltimore roses, but can you fully appreciate how much you guys have done so far this season, how successful you guys have come up to this point?
Yeah, it's been awesome. We got a great group of guys, and everything was set in stone when we first played in Miami this year, and I feel like we just took off from there. We had a couple bumps in the road throughout the season, but I think we really started to find our niche after Seattle, and we just started rolling from there. So we got a great group of guys, and we're definitely blessed and happy to be in this position.
And obviously, you guys have enormous things out in front of you. You guys have only checked off one of your goals, win the division, and then it goes on from there. With that said, we were talking briefly off the air about how much fun it does appear you guys are having. I know it's a job, but we all strive to have fun at work. Can you, it seems a little, and I say this complimentarily, like a high school team that really loves being around each other. Is that a fair way to put it? Can you maybe give us a window into the type of fun you guys are having, even as pro athletes?
Yeah, that's definitely the vibe. I mean, we have a bunch of young guys in our locker room, and they bring that energy all the time, just goofing around, playing around, but also being serious when we need to be. And, you know, we work really hard during the week, so when we get out there on Sundays, we just trying to have fun. We're trying to have a ball with each other. And we know that we got each other's back. It's a brotherhood that we've built up since last year. And, you know, it's just great to see everything coming together. You know, that's how we like to keep it around here. We like to keep it loose. We like to have a good time. But, we're definitely all about the wins and making sure we put in the work in.
Willie, one of the keys to that success and having the fun is Lamar Jackson. You've been there for both of his seasons. How much has he improved, or how has he improved so much from last year to this year?
I think the thing with Lamar last year was just the confidence of coming in the NFL and being elite. He got thrown into the mix like halfway through the year. I believe we were 4-5 against Cincinnati when he first started. And, you know, he always had the ability to be great. I don't think anybody knew about his arm talent until this year. But he's definitely, you know, buttoned down, and he went to work this offseason. He wanted to throw. He wanted to be a better passer. And, you know, that's what he's been doing this year. So, you know, the things that Lamar has grown, and he's still growing as a player, as an athlete, as a, you know, just a professional, he's definitely got so much more room to grow. But this year, he's definitely taking the league by storm, and that's just all about, you know, the work he puts in and, you know, how serious he is about the game.
Willie, he's also become one of the most popular players. You can't even buy one of his jerseys anymore. And as a result, we now know almost everything there is to know about Lamar Jackson. But give us something, tell us something that we don't know about him, that only you guys would know from being with him day in and day out.
Man, dude is a clown, man. He loves to have fun. You hear me? He's always in the walkthroughs playing around. You know, he's in the locker room joking. You know, between him, Mark, and Marquise, you know, they always having a ball. And that's that personality I was talking about earlier. We got a bunch of young guys, and he's one of them. And he just brings that fun energy, that fun life that, you know, a lot of teams, you know, might be missing. And, you know, he brings that energy, and we feed off of it. And, you know, he's a goofball, man. He loves that fun. He's a kid playing a grown man's game. So, you know, he's having fun, that's for sure.
Obviously, you guys have shown, mostly thanks to yourself, Hollywood Brown, Lamar, and the tight ends, that you guys can throw the ball as well as any team in football, but you're also a historically great running team. And one thing at all levels of football seems to be the case, running can sap the will of your opponent. It's seeing defenses get run on and run on and run on. When you're out there, even in games, because there's been some games this year where you don't have monster numbers, where you're blocking, do you hear some of the chatter or see over the course of the game almost some of the emotion drain from the face of the opponent? Like, again, they're just running at 6 yards every time. Can you feel that when you're out there, when the momentum turns within the game?
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely starts in the third quarter. You start to feel their will, and then you kind of get a feeling of, you know, how well are they in shape? You know, like, are they still bringing it like they were in the first quarter, or are they kind of like, you know, they balancing it out, and we kind of taking our position on them? So, I mean, our run game is very heavy. You know, we put a lot of time in the offseason, you know, perfecting the run game and also the passing game. But that run game is serious, man. It starts to wear on people in like the third, the fourth quarter. You're really going to find out if teams are, you know, about that life. So, you know, it's fun, and, you know, we do a great job of making sure we get on our guys, and we have elite running backs, Gus Edwards, Mark Ingram, Justice Hill. You know, those guys make it happen. So between them and the O-line, you know, they doing their thing up front.
Willie, of course, before you went to Baltimore, you were in New Orleans with Drew Brees, the future Hall of Famer. How are he and Lamar as leaders, how are they similar, and how are they different?
Yeah, well, Drew's 40 years old, and Lamar is like 22. So well, it's a huge age difference. But as leaders, I think they're both really competitive. I know when I was in New Orleans, Drew was always playing games or like doing competitive stuff, like whether it was throwing footballs in a trash can or like playing, cornhole or something like that. He was very competitive. And I think Lamar is the same way in the sense that when it comes to game day, he doesn't like to lose. And he's going to do everything possible to make sure that we put ourselves in position to win games. And that's how Drew was, you know, all the time. And, you know, with between his film study and his execution on game day, you know, that's what makes Drew elite. And I think Lamar is just at a young age where he's starting to learn each year that, you know, hey, I got to do this. I got to do this better. I got to watch film more on this team just to prepare himself. So the age difference is a huge gap, the experience. But I think when it comes to being leaders, they're both very competitive and they both have a will to win to get the job done.
You guys have obviously played all the best teams in the AFC. I know you have work to do. You guys, weeks, you guys have already clinched the one seed, so you're not going to play everyone week 17. You'll have the bye. If you do win the divisional round, who do you think you will be? Who do you think would give you the best game in the conference championship in Baltimore?
I think it'd be the Kansas City Chiefs because they have a very explosive offense, and we went down to the wire with them week 3. And they've given us trouble over the years. Last year they gave us trouble. But I think that team right there is very explosive. Their defense is athletic enough to stay with us. But I think I like the Kansas City Chiefs. I like seeing them because the matchups are so great. It could be New England, but if you're asking me, I think it's going to be Kansas City.
Willie, I know you guys have a meeting that's about to start. We'll let you get to it. Thank you so much for spending the beginning part of your day with us. We appreciate it. Good luck this postseason. We'll be watching.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, Willie. Good luck.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.